Next, I will call to order the Government Operations Reform Technology and Elections Committee. The first bill on the agenda is House File 1978, Representative Murphy. Representative Murphy, we do not have a quorum, but when we get a quorum, we will take care of putting your bill with a motion before us, but since there, we really don't have one. But you may start explaining your bill.
Thank
Welcome
you.
To the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for having this meeting today. The Pension Commission was appointed at midterm of the session, and so we quickly, well, not so quickly, but we called a meeting as soon as possible, and then there was a problem with the first meeting. So we had two meetings that were kind of marathon meetings from 6 to quarter to 12 at night and 6 to midnight at another time. And then just 2 days ago, we finished our business in trying to gather what could be, what issue, pension issues were, had been introduced in bill form and had to be heard and combined, incorporated into an omnibus pension bill this year, and what could be set aside for interim study so we would really carefully study the issues. And the bill that we have before you, 1978, delete everything bill, is what we need this session so that we can go forth and correct the errors of the 2006 omnibus bills and what the pension plans can use to continue to try to get the best benefit for all the people that are within their retirement, both for those people that are currently working and those retirees that are counting on their pensions to remain stable and good for them and for the rest of their lives. And that's what it's all about, providing financial security for those people that trust us to manage their plans to the best of our ability and to pass laws that recognize the sanctity of the money that has been entrusted to the funds so that they will have secure futures. Anyway, in this bill, 1978, which is the vehicle, we have a series of articles, 12 articles, and I would like to briefly summarize what they are. Articles 1 and 2 are clarifications and corrections and administrative provisions for the various public pension plans, the MSRS, the PERA, and the TRA. Article 3 is concerns the MSRS correctional plan, and it revises the job titles. Every year, the correctional plan revises their job titles and makes suggestions if there are any positions that should be included in the correction plan that meets the current criteria for becoming part of that. And this Article 3, I think, changes the job titles of 30 employees, and they're notified, and they are pretty much in agreement with those. Article 4 is perhaps the, at the time of its inclusion, had the greatest amount of discussion. It's the PERA, police and fire disability. It talks about the disability and benefit eligibility, and it's 3 years, at least 3 years in the making, and it was the recommendation of the, it is the recommendation of the Pension Commission to accept it as it's contained in the bill. And there were still a few people that thought they, that it went too far, but we had representatives from the major groups that said it was fine. And Article 5 deals with privatizations of healthcare facilities that have gone to private, and yet we are going to ensure that their pensions, the people that are employed there that had nothing to do with whether it went private, whether the owners go private or not, that they will still be able to be in the pension plans. Article 5 dealt with a bill by Representative Morrow, Representative Olin, Representative Hamilton, and Representative Shemansky about these private health care facilities. We followed the same pattern that we had done in previous years for that type of thing, and there was no opposition whatsoever. Article 6 talks about the appeals process for the various statewide retirement plans, and it's trying to make all the plans more uniform in the appeals process. They will all have the same appeals process. Article 7 deals with the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association, and it extends the amortization date to 2038, and it changes some of their conditions, and there are people here that can answer specific questions about that. And that is the other, besides Article 4, Article 7, that might have some need for more explanation, because people are talking in the halls, and some people know what they're talking about, and others are just questioning, is that really a better deal for them than for us, kind of thing. But St. Paul teachers are in a unique position in that they are trying to set themselves up so they are not making the same errors of letting time go by as we and the Minneapolis teachers did. And so they won't be in the same situation that the Minneapolis teachers are, where they're coming to say, we have no other alternatives. They are trying to build stability into their program so they won't have to come and say, oh, help me, the sky is falling. Do something. They are trying to do it now and stop the bleeding now so a more severe thing won't happen down the line. And I have to admire, personally, I have to admire that. I think that's a good deal. Article 8 deals with the Minneapolis Employee Retirement Fund that is not an open fund, and it talks about their assets with the State Board of Investment, and we included that with a local approval clause. And Article 9 has to do with the Minneapolis Police and Relief Association and Minneapolis Firefighters Relief Association, and this also has a local approval clause so that if the city doesn't think it's such a good idea at a particular time, it won't happen. Article 10 makes changes to the volunteer firefighter benefits. Creates an omission in the 2006 Omnibus Retirement Bill, and in the 2006 Retirement Bill inadvertently tripled the benefits, and they should have just doubled And so this is correcting that error, although they were just paying out as if it had been doubled. But we don't want to continue that. Article 11 makes changes to the legislative retirement plan for a recently deceased legislator, and Section 5 deals with middle management employees who there's an incentive plan for middle management employees, and we are expanding that to teachers in the state also and to local governments, and we don't anticipate that there's going to be a whole lot of people using it, because in the past only 10 people have used it, but the Minneapolis teachers especially said this might be a tool that they'll be able to use as they're closing schools and declining enrollments taking place, and so they wanted us to continue it. And I think the date, Representative Kahn can correct me, I think the date that it will go to is 2009. And also, there's a small part of this Article 11 that deals with putting the person that goes, a police officer that might be hired as the leader of the gang and drug strike force, it allows that person to go into the state patrol plan because they come from a local and they become a state employee. And so it allows them to go into the state patrol retirement plan. And also, the Article 11 deals with four widows in Thief River Falls that were capped at a benefit increase of up to $600, and now it allows them, Thief River Falls, to work out something in the next year so they can go beyond that cap. But for now, I think it's going to be up to like $625, so that they can, their pensions can go up with the cost of living. And Article 12 deals with a group of one-person bills that various legislators brought before us, and they were acceptable to the plans, and they were found that there were errors made, perhaps by their local district on reporting or their local agency on reporting or something. They were legitimate requests that we make adjustments, and that's what Article 12 is all about.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. We have a quorum. I'm going to move that House File 1978 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Rules Committee. That puts the bill before us, and then I think we have at least one other person on the agenda that wishes to speak to the bill. Larry Martin, Executive Director. Mr. Martin.
Larry Martin.
Mr. Martin, did you wish to speak to the bill, or are you here just for questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm Larry Martin from the Pension Commission staff. I'm here as a resource to answer questions.
All right. So members' questions to the Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative, maybe Mr. Martin, I'm wondering, I just need some more information about that middle management piece. I guess I just wanted to know how it affects the teachers and where it actually came from.
Mr. Martin.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The middle management piece that Representative Murphy talked about is a retirement incentive program. It's an extension of a 2006 retirement incentive program. And basically what it provides is a $17,000 payment, lump sum payment, which can be used either to be deposited in the health care access account or used to buy service credit or to buy an annuity by a person who's on the verge of retiring. The notion is, as we explained to the Pension Commission, the cost to lay off a state employee is about $25,000. If $17,000 can induce a person to retire rather than to lay off one or more state employees, when a state agency is being reorganized or there are budget reductions, this would be a good way to resolve the issue. The program is extended until the year 2009. It was enacted by the 2006 our legislature was only applicable for the 2006 interim. This extends it to the year 2009. It also adds some additional protections with respect to rehiring someone who uses the incentive. Requires some upper level approval before the offer can be made to a retiring employee, and it's made applicable to any public employee covered by a public employee pension plan, other than an elected official.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy,
the agency has a choice or not whether they wish to offer that.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Martin, I have a couple of questions about the portion of the bill dealing with the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund. Could you provide for the committee a little background as to how this change would affect your typical St. Paul retired teacher now and in the future?
Mr. Martin.
Members, the St. Paul teacher provision can be found in Article 7. That's starting on page 105 of the Delete Everything Amendment. It makes three changes related to the St. Paul teachers plan. One, it replaces their current post-retirement mechanism. The current mechanism is an automatic 2% increase plus an investment related component above that. It replaces that current double or a pair of increases, potential increases, with a single CPI-based increase with a maximum of 5% in a year. It also extends the amortization target date for this plan to the year 2038. And it also eliminates a special administrative assessment if the admin expenses of the St. Paul Teachers Plan exceeds the comparable administrative expenses of the statewide TRA plan. I suspect that your question really relates to the post retirement adjustment mechanism. The current mechanism is a 2% plus whatever is supported by their five-year average investment performance, capped at 5%. Starting in 2010, an action of the 2006 legislature, and this shifts it to a consumer price index based. It probably, as I understand, the investment performance of the St. Paul Teachers Plan for the next possible increase is likely to be greater than 5%, and if we shift it to a consumer price index based increase, it would be a smaller amount in the next set of increases, since it depends upon variables over time beyond the next increase. It would be pure speculation to both try and guess as to the investment performance of the pension fund and the future rate of the cost of living. So this shifts from basing the post-retirement increase on the basically funding mechanism for the increase, an actuarial gain related to investment earnings above the actuarial assumption rate, and shifts it to a fairly straightforward cost of living.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Martin, so to summarize, we're removing the investment component of the retirement payout based on the performance of the fund entirely, but we are improving the inflation component. Is that accurate to say?
Mr. Chair, we're replacing the current mechanism, which is a two-part mechanism, an automatic 2% plus investment component, and we're replacing that with a single component factor based on the increase in the consumer price index.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. what impact, actuarially speaking, does this have on the St. Paul Teachers Fund, this change?
Mr. Mark.
Yes, Mr. Chair, the part of the current program is funded out of investment gains that are not part of the current actuarial work. So part of the liability of the current program and part of the funding come from an actuarial gain that would not show up in the normal actuarial work. When you shift to a consumer price index-based post-retirement mechanism, all of the future post-retirement increases are part of the actuarial assumptions, are part of the actuarial work. So what we have seen with the actuarial work that's been provided by the pension plan is that this does increase the overall liability of the pension plan, does increase the costs of the pension plan. The number I've seen is in the neighborhood of about 4% of pay, or a little over 4% of pay. If you look at just this part of the component, it's offset some by the impact of the amortization change that makes the contribution requirement appear smaller, does not actually reduce the liability. I would extend the period over which that liability will ultimately be paid. So this does increase the normal cost of the plan, does increase the liability and the amortization contribution requirement of the plan, in part because you're shifting from a benefit increase mechanism that's paid for out of gains that are not part of the actuarial work, and now you're folding them into something that is regularly valued in the actuarial valuation process.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, thank you for your indulgence here. I am getting somewhere, I promise. My next question is this. How well is the St. Paul Teachers Fund funded over time compared to other public retiree funds like MSRS, to which we all contribute, I believe, or TRA, another teachers retirement fund that covers most of the rest of the state?
Mr. Martin.
I must admit that my memory doesn't let me recite the numbers right off the top of my head. The St. Paul Teachers Plan is currently 69% funded, has liabilities of about $1.4 billion, assets of about $940 million, and an unfunded of about $420 million. So that's the funding ratio. That's roughly equivalent to the equity one would have in one's house if you wanted to make a rough analogy. I think more importantly, if you look at the actuarial requirements, what is the funding requirement, the contribution needed annually versus what contributions are actually coming into the plan, the plan has a total actuarial requirement of just over 25% of pay, has a current funding stream of 16.3% of pay. That leaves a deficiency in its contributions currently of 8.7% of pay, or about $20 million per year.
Okay. Representative Morgan.
And Mr. Chair, and how does that compare to the funding ratios for those other plans? TRA, let's go with TRA. Let's compare teacher plan to teacher plan.
Mr. Martin.
Yes. Yes, members, the TRA plan is 92% funded, has an actuarial liability of $20.7 billion, assets of about $19 billion, and an unfunded of about $1.6 billion. It currently has a funding requirement of 12.11% of pay, funding at 11.31% of pay, so it's got a narrow deficiency of 0.8% of pay.
Mr. Chair, then I guess my question is this. Let me ask one more question then. The funding component, the inflationary component for the St. Paul Fund is going to be up to 5% according to this change in law. And I certainly appreciate, as Representative Murphy stated, that they're trying to do something to improve the position of their plan, the funding position of their plan. But the inflationary component for the St. Paul Teachers Plan includes up to 5%. The better funded TRA plan includes an inflationary component of up to what maximum value, sir? Do you know?
Mr. Martin.
Yes, members, the post-retirement fund in which the TRA participates has an inflation component and an investment component. The inflation component is up to 2.5%.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, very much. And I guess that's the point I'm getting at. And I guess at this point I would like to offer an amendment. On page 106, line 27. I would like to change, and I guess this is an oral amendment, but it's pretty simple, the cap of 5.0 to 2.5 for the St. Paul Teachers Fund.
All right. Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, that I believe that accomplishes what Representative Morgan intends to do. Page 106, line 27, delete 5.0 and insert 2.5.
Representative Morgan, you move that amendment?
I would like to move that amendment, Mr. Chair.
That amendment is before us. So, to the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Could Representative Thiessen is here, and this was his bill originally. Could we ask him to respond to that amendment?
Representative Murphy, that is fortuitous, and we will allow that to occur.
Thank you.
Representative Thiessen.
Hi. Thank you.
Welcome
Mr.
to the Chair.
I guess the only comment that the two comments I would make, as Mr. Martin explained, the reason for this proposal is that what we're going to be seeing in this fund, just because of the reality of their investment returns in the St. Paul Fund, which have been actually extremely high, they've done very well for the last several years, they would be paying out 5% next year and for the coming years foreseeably. And so this is actually an effort to bring down what they're going to be paying out and do better by their fund, and so avoid the consequences that I think a lot of people are concerned about. The other thing is that currently what they have is a, as Mr. Martin explained, a 2%, which is unrelated to inflation. It's just a flat 2% that they get every year, plus an investment return over 8%. If they make over 8.5%, they can get up to 3% more. And by moving in the direction of this amendment, by going to 5%, you know, I don't particularly think this is a benefit increase or a benefit cut. They just have a very different benefit structure today than does TRA, and they have a different. They would have a different benefit post-benefit retirement benefit structure after this. The proposal is adopted. My concern here is one thing we don't do necessarily when we make changes to post-retirement benefits is actually cut post-retirement benefits, make them much worse than they currently are. And I think that the proposed amendment would actually make the post-retirement benefits worse without any corresponding assistance to the St. Paul Teachers Fund. So I think they are actually trying to do the right thing under the legislation by coming forward with this proposal. And I'm just concerned that we make a change that is a significant cut in benefits, which this would be. I mean, basically, they'd be going to where they are today on their flat rate, and then without any chance of any investment returns, which almost every other fund gets. And so that's, I guess, just to express my concern with the proposed amendment.
Representative Morgan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate, again, what the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund is trying to do to bring their fund back into full sufficiency. My concern would be that with several years of possible high inflation and poor fund performance, that their fund would continue to have a less of a sufficiency. And we would see what we saw last year with the Minneapolis Teachers Fund, where TRA had to come in and bail out the Minneapolis Teachers Fund, which was a concern for TRA members. So I want to help the St. Paul Teachers Fund move towards full sufficiency. I think that's in the best interests of the taxpayers and the best interests of all participants in all public pension funds. And I think a better way to do it, it would be to make their payout look a little bit more like the benefit that the TRA members have. Representative Thiessen mentioned that the TRA members have an investment component, but they actually only have an investment component if the fund's performance exceeds 8.5% and the fund is fully funded. And as we've heard Mr. Martin say, the TRA fund is closer to being fully funded than the St. Paul Teachers Fund, but it's not. Still, and would not people would not be entitled to that investment component. Further, I'm concerned that TRA members are going to take a look at what the St. Paul teachers got and said, hey, our fund's in better position than theirs, and yet they're getting a 5% limit on their inflationary increases. We only have 2.5%. Why can't we do better? I don't think that's a conversation we want to have as we move into the future, and that's why I'm proposing this amendment.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Morgan, you actually explained to me in better detail what you were doing. I appreciate that. Representative Thiessen, the question I have, or for Representative Murphy, is there's talk about, and I would disagree with Representative Morgan's characterization that the TRA came and took care of the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Association. Clearly, it was so badly mismanaged that the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Association came to the legislature and forced us to have to bail it out. What I'm concerned with in this one, Representative Murphy, you said that they're doing some things to take care of themselves so they don't come screaming for help, and yet that appears to me to be exactly what's happening here is the solution, despite apparently some wonderful investment returns, which I guess I haven't looked at them, so I don't know how wonderful they are.
Over 11.5%.
That's not bad. That's not bad. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen. But why are we stepping in on this fund now? And why, if you could give us more rationale for treating St. Paul differently than Minneapolis or anybody else, the TRA, I'd appreciate it.
Representative Thiessen.
Mr. Chair, sure. Well, the reason that we have to step in this circumstance is, as I said, if we don't, we control actually what they pay out. We set the rules for how they pay out. And so if we don't change those rules, because they get the 2% and because they've had these investment returns, they will be forced, the board or whoever, you know, the administrators of the fund will be forced to pay out 5% benefit, post-retirement benefit increase this year because those are the rules we've given them. And remember that that 5% then goes into the base. And so in the future, you're building off that 5%. And so it has multiplier effects. You know, so, the next increase in benefits builds off the 5% increase they would give this year. And so what this is trying to say is that instead of paying off 5% this year, because inflation is, you know, in the range of the 2 to 3%, probably, I don't know exactly what we're anticipating inflation to be, but I think it's around 2.5%, somewhere in that range, we'd actually be giving them a lower payout, and then it would have lower multiplier effects going into the future. The other thing I would say is we have been looking at post-retirement benefit changes, and the principles of the Pension Commission, notwithstanding what we do with all these many funds, are that what that should really be doing is reflecting, trying to keep pensioners, retirees, in line with inflation. That's kind of our general principle, that, you know, when you get your benefit and try to keep up with the cost of living to an extent, and that's, you know, obviously we have a 5% cap on this. We haven't seen those kind of inflation rates, as you very well know, in decades. And so the concern about paying 5% every year that Representative Morgan has expressed, I think, is kind of an unrealistic concern because we just haven't seen that in our economy for a long time, and we've been paid very close attention to that, I mean, since the 80s. I guess the last thing that I would leave the committee with is, and this is, I think, a serious issue and why this is actually a pretty bold proposal, is that once we go to a pure inflationary in a pure inflationary direction, under federal law, we can't go back. So we couldn't come back in this fund, as I understand it, because of IRS rules, to a another form that would have an investment component piece. So I think we ought to be very careful going forward about where we set these numbers. We can always move the numbers of inflation, I suppose, as Representative Morgan wants to do, but that would be the explanation for it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen, I won't get into what would be a long discussion about why I don't agree with your proposed change. But if you would answer the question, frankly, that's been posed by Representative Morgan, I think what you just said is we don't need 5%. It's not going to be an issue. So the question that I ask you is, if it's not going to be an issue, why wouldn't you go with what Representative Morgan has suggested?
Representative Teason.
And Mr. Chair, because it could be an issue. I'm saying historically it hasn't. But it could, and if you get in a situation where you're capping inflation in one fund at 2.5% without an investment component piece, there may be circumstances where people are far behind. You got to look at all the pieces of it.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I think one of the problems is also that the St. Paul Fund has a different structure with its post. It doesn't have a separate post-retirement fund. And so that's something else which deals with the accounting. But, I think, as has been explained, this actually is likely to be a benefit cut, but it's not the assured benefit cut that Representative Morgan's amendment would do, which is we have absolutely never done that under any circumstances. So I think this is a cut that brings control in. And the problem about the comparison is that it's one of these apples and oranges comparisons, is that without the separation of the post fund, which other retirement funds have, you can't compare the level of funding. You can't compare the level of funding ratios. So if you were to set up a post fund, and if you were to put all in St. Paul, it's a combined fund, which I think is what the legislative auditor has suggested that we do. If you were to set out a separate post fund and then all of the investment returns would go into that, the funding ratio would just go way, way down. So this is bringing us much more in line in what the legislative auditor required, and it's not violating our historic trend of never cutting an individual's pension benefit.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just I want to clarify a couple of things about my amendment. First of all, I support the removal of the investment component. I think that's a move in the right direction. I would support a language that would say you only pay the investment component if the fund is sufficiently funded, like with PRA. I'd support that as well. I think getting that investment component out of there is fine, and my amendment would not change that. My amendment would still maintain removing the investment component from the increases in benefit to the post-retirement fund. My amendment would simply cap that inflationary component at 2.5%, like it is true for the better-funded TRA plan. And it's not a cut in benefit. It's a reduction in the cap of the increase in benefit from year to year. And I think that's important. So I would disagree with Representative Kahn in her characterization. It's just moving it more in line with another better-funded teacher retirement plan. And I think it's a very prudent thing to do at this time. And as Representative Teason suggested, we can come back in the future and take a look at that cap for that fund or any other fund that would like to change it and see if it would be prudent to do so.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Nelson.
Well, just a correction on that.
Representative Kahn. Okay. Representative Nelson.
No problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also sit on the Pension Commission, and as this was brought forward to us, they are actually taking a step backwards, because they're actually taking a step to correct their problems. Because as it was explained to us, if we didn't do this 5% cap as is in here, they'd be paying out higher than 5% with their investment income and the 2% that they currently have in there. And I guess I don't feel comfortable putting a 2.5% cap on this without, like TRA has, the investment component. I mean, even that language that would say once it's fully funded, they could use that investment to pay out additional benefits, because now we're hamstringing this fund, and it's basically only they can only get the 2.5%, or TRA can get 2.5%, and if their post fund is 100% funded, which should be shortly, and they have better investment gains, they can get the 2.5% plus. We are punishing this fund to saying they can only get 2.5% and ever only get 2.5%, and that's why I have concerns, and I would speak against this amendment.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, essentially, Representative Morgan, if you just look at the language on 106, the cutting out of the investment increase is a decrease.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I'm trying to figure out is that I'm hearing talk about benefit cuts and Representative Nelson, you said it was a step backward, but when I look at the language of the bill, it's changing the target date for solvency from 2021 to 2038. How is that not a step backward for this fund? It seems to me that what Representative Morgan is doing is actually moving this fund forward towards solvency and ensuring that the retirees are going to get the benefits that they are expecting to get out of the fund, as opposed to being in a precarious position for another large number of years. And so it seems to me that what Representative Morgan is doing is a step in the right direction. And it also seems to me that there's value in solvency for these folks who are waiting for their benefits out into the future. So, I don't know Representative Thiessen if I've characterized anything differently, but isn't there value in solvency for this fund, value in solvency in assuring these pensioners that they're going to get the pensions that they deserve without having to come to the state? Isn't there value in keeping the target date closer to where we are today as opposed to pushing it out farther?
Representative Thiessen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. First of all, yes, there clearly is value in solvency, and I think that is what this proposal is taking a step in that direction, as we see where their investment returns have been recently. With regard to the amortization date, that date that's put in there actually just sets it where the TRA is, or within a year or two of where the TRA's investment amortization date is. That's just a matter of recognizing that people work for 30 years. And so you want to set the amortization date out typically about the length that someone is going to have a working life, and that's 2038 is about that time. It doesn't really affect, in fact, it improves the solvency of the fund in some sense because you have more time to make up the deficiency. So that's the reason for that change. It just really gets it in line with the other state teacher TRA fund.
Representative Brown.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Thiessen, I heard Mr. Martin say, though, that the approach that you're taking in this bill actually increases liability and increases cost to the pension plan. So how does that further solvency for these folks?
Representative Thiessen.
Mr. Chair, and the reason is because when he's talking about the amortization number, he is, and as he said, he assumes an 8.5% return. He can't assume, when we're looking at those numbers, the fact that it's actually 11.5% that they're getting, so you're not getting that, recognizing that payout over time. That there's a difference between what the reality of the money is and how you look at it from an actuarial point of view, I guess, is
the distinction.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if Mr. Martin or Representative Murphy could answer this. I think I recall in the presenting of the bill that there was a statement made about administrative costs for this fund. The cap was taken off, and I'm not sure if I heard that correctly, Mr. Chairman, or if I did not.
Representative Murphy, do you want to respond, or should we give Mr.
Martin back? Mr. Martin made that statement.
Mr. Martin.
But the director of the fund is here also.
Yes, members, if you... If you look on page 109 of the -6A amendment, the repealer section in the middle of the page, there's a repealer of section 354A12, subdivision 3. This is an existing provision of the law which imposes a special assessment on the St. Paul teacher active members and retired members if the St. Paul teacher's administrative expenses exceed the comparable expense of TRA. When this was first imposed in the early 1990s, for a period of years, there was a special assessment. St. Paul teacher's administrative expenses were higher than the comparable TRA admin expenses. That has not been the case in recent years, and so the administrative assessment has not been imposed for several years. And that's the change that's in this article related to the administrative expense assessment.
Representative Brown.
They're repealing it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Martin, so the effect of that would be that there, if I'm understanding you correctly, the special assessment is in place, but it hasn't been implemented because their administrative costs have been held to that same level. But just moving forward, if their administrative costs would exceed that level, if we repeal this section, no administration penalty would be assessed. Is that correct? So am I understanding you correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair. That's the circumstance.
Mr. Martin.
If we repeal this assessment, there would be no assessment if future events lead to the trigger otherwise having been met.
Okay. So, Mr.
President Broad.
And Mr. Martin, so the effect of this could be that the administrative costs for this fund could jump up potentially significantly?
Mr. Martin.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The administrative expenses is the smallest component of the pension fund funding and liability issue. We're talking about, in this case, 0.26% of pay or thereabouts, so less than a quarter of 1% of pay in a plan that has a total actuarial a requirement of about 25% of pay. So we're talking about a very nominal amount of funding. Yes, if the administrative expenses do go up, there would not be an extra funding stream, but we're not talking about making or breaking the funding of this plan. It's within a relatively small confine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Martin, thank you. I do appreciate that it's a very small portion, but what I'm trying to understand and get to is, for argument's sake, if the funding or if the administrative costs of this plan go up, where does the money come from? My assumption, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, is that it comes from the amount paid out to the pensioners. Is that correct?
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair, if the administrative expenses go up, cost of paying those admin expenses comes from the pension fund. It comes from the generalized assets, which both underlie our retiree benefits and active member benefits.
We have one more individual that wishes to testify on this issue to the amendment. Mr. Rice, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself to the record and to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian Rice. I'm represent the Committee of Nine, which is a group of active and retired St. Paul teachers who are members of the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Plan Association, Fund Association. On the amendment, I think one thing the committee should understand is that the benefit structure of St. Paul teachers is different than TRA. And the amount at which they accrue benefits is different. Last year when you did the consolidation with the Minneapolis Teachers Retirement Fund, and the process of doing that, TRA members received a benefit increase for years going forward, and it was in excess of roughly 10% on their formula. St. Paul teachers are not asking to do that in terms of a formula benefit, and this legislation does call for reduction. Representative Thiessen said 5%. Our current calculations are that if this law does not pass and you operate under current law, the benefit would be 6%. With respect to the amendment offered by Representative Morgan, we brought this our same amendment forward last year, but obviously with the Minneapolis Teachers Bill, it was significant legislation. It was hard to get this kind of hearing time on the bill. One of the reasons to conform or to come up with an amendment is the federal government has enacted Internal Revenue Service requirements that if you make post-retirement benefit adjustments after, I believe it was 2001, they had to conform with IRS regulations. This amendment, the way we've drafted it, exactly conforms with federal law. The change you made last year to apply to the post funds did not, and it's now subject to major funds have submitted requests to the IRS to see if they can get a waiver from their regulations. The language we've drafted, which is cost of living, Social Security up to 5%, is exactly in conformance with IRS regulations and would not require a special ruling, letter ruling from the IRS. We would say that our effort to do this is exactly consistent with what the legislative auditor recommended in their report to the legislature, which suggested cost of living increase dealing with, just quickly to read from their report, to reduce the future the risk of future local pension funding problems, the legislative, this is from the legislative auditor's report in January, to reduce the future, the risk of future local pension funding problems, the legislature should change the post-retirement benefit formula for the teacher funds in St. Paul to disallow investment-based benefit increases when these funds have large deficits. We're doing that with the legislation. Secondly, the legislative auditor recommended the legislature should consider replacing the post-retirement formula for St. Paul with formulas based on inflation. In addition, to consider increasing contributions. We're not, the money part we can't get this year, we'll have to delay that. But we're asking for inflation, and quite honestly, members of the committee, we think that Representative Morgan's amendment is really punitive to our members. They are they're asked to give something up. It was not easy to go to our membership and tell them, you have to take less for the solvency of the fund. Because they could have sat back and said, don't do anything. And there's a lot of inertia in the legislature on this issue. Don't do anything, and then pay 6% next year and say, oh, well, we took the money and ran, and wait for a situation like Minneapolis to develop. Instead, the fund directors came forward proactively with a proposal last year. We've come again this year. It's not easy to go to your members and say, cut benefits. Our members said, well, what about TRA? You get, the legislature gave them a formula increase.
Mr. Rice, to the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, this is...
To the amendment, please.
On the amendment... Last year, the legislature granted over a 10% increase to TRA. Our members are saying, you gave them 10%. They told us, go in and get what TRA said. We said, we can't do that. To do that would further sink the funding ratio. If this changed from 69 to 65%, you didn't like that, to do what you did for TRA would exacerbate that problem further. And I just tell you, honestly, I think the fund directors, the members have come forward with a reasonable proposal. How often it hits five, I don't know. But the exact comparison to TRA and St. Paul doesn't apply anymore because the funding ratios, because of the benefits are different. And I guess we think it's a reasonable proposal, and it makes some sense, and it deals with the problem before it gets out of hand. And we'll have a very difficult time going back and saying we did this, and on top of that, they kept.
Members, we have at least two more individuals. One of them is a legislative auditor that wish to testify on this amendment. So if we can be very brief and pointed with our questions. Is this to Mr. Rice?
Actually, it is, Mr. Chairman, but it goes directly to Representative Morgan's amendment.
Right. So, Representative Emmer.
Listening to Representative Thiessen and now the most recent testifier, it just dawns on me that if Representative Morgan were interested in an amendment to his amendment, if the issue is the 8.5% return, why don't we suggest modifying the amendment so it's a 2.5% unless the return exceeds 8.5, in which case then you could raise it.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I would consider that a friendly amendment to my amendment if the other piece that the other teacher retirement fund has to meet is in there too, and that is a requirement that before that performance-based component be added to it, that you have full sufficiency of the fund.
Representative Broad, to the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if while we're talking with the legislative auditor, if Mr. Shepard could work on drafting something, because I think that both Representative Morgan and Emmer are onto something, and if you add that solvency piece in,
right.
Mr. Chairman, I think that would be a great amendment to the amendment.
I'm going to let Mr. Shepard explain the complexity of this particular addition to the amendment. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, I can consult with Mr. Martin, but I'm not confident I could do this in the time today. This is really complex, and to write that up, it would take a lot to get it right, especially because once something goes into law, you've promised somebody something. I don't want to take it lightly or get it wrong, and I don't know that I could write that concept quickly.
All right.
I will consult with Mr. Martin and see if he has some thoughts.
The legislative auditor, and this is to the amendment. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor. I didn't come here with the intent of getting involved in this particular debate, but since our report was referenced, I thought you ought to be reminded of what we found and what we recommended in its totality. We appreciate the fact that, as Mr. Rice said, some people have picked up on some of our recommendations to solve some of the problems at the St. Paul Teachers Fund. But we actually made additional recommendations that are not being brought forth, and I thought you ought to hear that. So I'd like to ask Jody Hauer, who did the research and wrote our report, to very briefly remind you of some of the additional recommendations that we made.
Mr. Nobles, would this be to this particular amendment?
Yes, I believe it would be, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Jody Hauer. I'm with the Legislative Auditor's Office. Mr. Rice is correct that we did recommend that the benefit formula be changed for the St. Paul Teachers Fund, taking it away from an investment-based increase to one that is based on inflation. But we coupled that recommendation with one to also address the deficit, because that change in and of itself, that is changing the benefit formula, does not address the deficit in that fund. We're suggesting that in addition to changing that benefit formula, that there also be increased contributions considered for that fund. It's at 69% now. It's been below 100% funding for many, many years. It did climb up in the strong market right before 2000, but it came back down hard. It never did reach 100%, and we're suggesting some additional contributions need to be made so that the deficit isn't increased. One last thing I would say is that we said, yes, inflation cap, we didn't say a specific cap, 5% was mentioned. We suggested as long as the deficit is there, perhaps that cap ought not be 5%. Perhaps it ought to be somewhat lower as long as the deficit remains.
Thank you. We have one other person that wishes to testify on this amendment, Keith Carlson. Mr. Carlson, to the amendment. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm executive director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. I have not spoken to Representative Morgan regarding this matter, nor have I had any direct involvement with this amendment. But I have communicated some of the same concerns that Representative Morgan has raised in this discussion to the members of the Pension Commission following their action adopting this. And those concerns are twofold. First, as has somewhat been identified, this arrangement is potentially, in times of low investment return and high inflation, providing a more generous increase for the members of a badly funded plan than is provided in current law. I think it has been accurately represented that during times of high investment return and relatively low inflation, our inflation really doesn't matter under their current post-retirement adjustment, it will somewhat reduce benefits. But over the longer term, it's frankly, as Mr. Martin indicated, anybody's guess, but the actuarial work suggests that it will decrease the funding ratio of this plan. And unfortunately, I think that makes the potential scenario that something similar to the Minneapolis Teachers Fund bailout by TRA will happen in the future. But the larger issue for me as a representative of employers of PERA is it's substantially out of step with what currently applies to TRA, MSRS, and PERA. As has been identified, the current post-retirement adjustment for all of those plans, retirees, is up to 2.5% for inflation, which is all those members are going to get for the foreseeable future. There is an additional up to 2.5% allowed for investment return. Once the financial health of the post-retirement fund is restored, but that's going to be in the very, very distant future. Under the current scenario, it will be at least 10 to 15 years, probably never, because of the $4 billion deficiency in the fund. And consequently, we, as representatives and employers, are looking at a scenario where our members are going to say, why don't we get this 5%? We're only getting 2.5%, and they're getting
this. Mr. Carlton, I realize that the historic background, we have, are you supportive of the Morgan Amendment?
I am against the amendment, all right, but I just make one more point.
All right, one more point.
I think
point.
It's Thank been you. Misrepresented that there's been no cut in future increases, because that is exactly what occurred for PERA, TRA, and MSRS last year. Up until last year, the post-retirement increase for those three funds was up to 2.5% for inflation and an uncapped amount for investment return above an 8.5%. And in some years, that has been in excess of a combined 10%. The legislature put a cap of 5% on that in total. So for all of those members, there was a reduction in their potential future increase. So I just want to correct the record on that matter.
Thank you. Representative Murphy, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your time. Thank you for the discussion. Mr. Koppler of the plan is here. And I think if you could just give us a little more time on this.
All right. Welcome to the committee.
For him to react to both situations.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members, Phil Kappler with the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. I will be extremely brief. This is a topic, obviously, on which we could expound at length. This initiative was brought by St. Paul Teachers for two reasons. Not one. It isn't just about financing. We're running a defined benefit pension program. And a defined benefit pension program gives a person a guaranteed formula benefit for the rest of their remaining temporal life once they retire. We're duty-bound to within reasonable bounds, guarantee that benefit doesn't deteriorate appreciably against cost of living, that it maintains within limitations, we can't chase inflation forever, the same purchasing power that the member had on the date that they retired. To do otherwise is anathema to the whole concept of a defined benefit pension program. So, I mean, one of the key pieces of this proposal is to bring the post-retirement benefit adjustment mechanism into a more rational process and to bring it more in sync with the whole concept of a defined benefit pension program. The fund definitely, the trustees definitely are worried about the effect of cost of living increases based on investment performance, because our investment performance of late has been extremely high, actually 1, 3, 5, and 10, extremely high. And for the last 5 years, we've been in the top decile of the Cowan Public Fund universe. Good numbers. We don't know how long that keeps going. But the idea of capping the increase at 2.5% to pair us with the state funds is kind of mixing apples and oranges. I mean, I appreciate Mr. Carlson's abiding concern about St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund and our solvency. We are solvent, to address Representative Rhodes' question. That isn't the issue. The issue is at what rate are we going to make progress towards full funding? 69% is not a sweet spot by any means, but it's not a desperate position in terms of funding. We were making progress. We were at 82% before the market downturn in 2000, and we're going to get back on that track. This proposal has two components. It is about controlling costs and not laying in large investment-related post-retirement increases, compounding increases that really aren't sustainable, especially for a fund that's 69% funded. And it's about bringing this cost of living adjustment formula in sync with inflation and the general price increase experience that our members are going to experience. This is the only source of relief that they get from inflation. We don't control inflation. The Federal Reserve does. They're the ones who control the money supply and can control interest rates and inflation. With the mechanisms that they have. They also have the ability to print money. 2.5% is, I think, punitive. Inflation can be expected to run. Since Social Security adopted this mechanism, and that's all we're doing, we have a program that is coordinated with Social Security. It's paired with it. and Social Security, we're attempting to get those two programs in sync, is what we're doing. Social Security has paid out benefits that have averaged 3.5% since 1975 when they first started paying out an inflation-based COLA. That's higher than the long-term average CPI number, which if you go back and include the full data set is 2.7% when it's defined as a constrained average of between 0 and 5 because we won't run up over 5. We think this is a good policy proposal. We think it's good for the members. We think it's magnanimous of our retirees to get on board with it in the interest of leaving a healthier fund behind for teachers who are just starting out their careers today. I'm proud to represent them here, and I understand that the amendment has good intentions. I think it has deleterious effects. And relative to the statewide funds and the structure of their post-retirement increase, I would just say that they're radically different. Never was a big fan of the post-retirement benefit increase formula when I was at the State Department of Finance either. I think if they're starting to rethink that equation themselves, if they want to be amended onto our bill, I think that'd be wonderful. But I'm not recommending that. I'm just saying St. Paul has its own issues to deal with, and we've got our own solution.
To the amendment, please.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy, to the amendment.
Chair, this was the last thing that we put in the bill. It obviously needs more discussion. I don't want to take it out. I really oppose the amendment. But if we don't have something in the bill, like Article 7, if the possibility exists that we're going to be paying 6%, or they're going to be paying 6% next year and compounding or in the next payout and compounding that, and that will put the fund more seriously in debt. And so this, we have to come to a better solution, and I'm willing to work on it if it stays in. And otherwise, my inclination is to pull Article 7.
All right, members, we've had a great deal of discussion. So, to the Morgan Amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Chair is in doubt. So, let's see a show of hands. All those in favor of the Morgan Amendment. All those opposed? Five. All right. The amendment fails on a tie vote. To the bill. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I have two non-controversial amendments to the bill.
Representative Kahn, we have one more person who wishes to testify on the bill in totality, but you say they're non-controversial?
I believe so.
Representative Kahn, you believe they're non-controversial?
I believe
or they are non-controversial. There's a difference.
Well, one, you know, Mr. Chairman, I can never make absolute statements. So I believe they are. Let me try. One is a legislative auditor's recommendation that goes to better fiscal disclosures. And the other one is one that I've checked out with Murphy, Steve Smith, and a minority leader, Seifert, and they all support. So I think
let's
it's
go.
A deal.
Do we have your amendments in writing?
Yes, I believe you have both of them.
All right, and what are those amendments?
Let's one is, let's first do the A1 amendment.
Is that in our packet, Representative?
I hope so, yes, I believe so.
All right,
so.
Representative Kahn moves the A1 amendment.
If you need to talk about it, I would have Jim Nobles speak about this. Just says that the standards should be consistent with generally accepted accounting principles applicable to government.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Again, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor. And you may recall earlier in the session, we presented to you a report that highlighted some of the issues related to the post-retirement fund deficit. I know that there are many very complicated and controversial issues involved with addressing that deficit. But there's one thing we can do that I think is simple, and I would agree with Representative Kahn that it should be not controversial, and that is to change pension commission standards on actuarial valuation of assets in the post fund so that we get a more realistic and current picture of the of those assets. And this language would accomplish that by simply saying that the pension commission standards on actuarial valuation shall be consistent with generally accepted accounting principles, which would require a market-related valuation of those assets.
Representative Murphy, to the A1 amendment.
Fine.
Any further discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The second amendment, Representative?
Second, I don't know if that's been passed
out. Is this the HRD?
HRD.
All
right. It's very simple.
We need the pages to, we've okay. got this actually.
Yeah. Already. Okay, I can explain it. I can.
While they're passing it out, why don't you explain
okay.
it?
Okay, what this does is, as your eyes have been glazing over on most of this pension discussion, one of the problems is the small number of people that that participate in in-depth pension discussions in the legislature, and this would expand the members of the pension commission from 5 to 7. And there are 2 points in doing this, although for obvious reasons I didn't write them into law. Really important to get another minority met. Right now we have, you know, again going by proportion, you could either put 2 minority members or 1 minority member on. If you go to 7, you'd have to have 2 minority members. And so this gets us another member of the minority member on. And the other thing that's really important, depending on how long it takes to learn this issue, and the new member on the Pension Commission this year is Representative Nelson, who's not really a new member because he knows it awfully well. But if the question is to be able to put a new member on who would be able to learn this. And we tried this. It was in the state. It's already passed once. It was in the state government finance bill.
Representative Kahn, the bill that was vetoed.
Yes.
All right.
And this is this is the one that I've discussed with Representative Seifert, Representative Smith,
Representative
Murphy.
Representative Kahn, I can't help but ask. This wasn't one of the reasons why it was vetoed.
It wasn't on the list, which is a pretty comprehensive list. It wasn't.
I'm just trying to protect Representative Murphy if we possibly can. Representative Murphy, to the Kahn amendment.
Mr. Chair, this truly has something to do with your committee and opinions, government operations, and I think Representative Kahn explained the reasoning, and indeed pensions are complicated.
So, Representative Murphy, you support the amendment?
Sure.
Any further discussion? I would characterize that as almost tepid, but any further discussion to the amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Emmer.
I'd like to move an oral amendment at page 90. I'd like to move to delete the deletion from lines 9033 through 9035. And I'd ask for I won't yet. I'd see what the reaction is.
Representative Emmer, let's make sure we have the amendment correct. So, Mr. Shepard, could you repeat that, please, so Mr. Shepard has the amendment? Representative Emmer.
I've got it.
You've got it?
Just double check.
All right, Mr. Shepard, would you repeat it then for us?
Mr. Chair, members, and Representative Emmer, my understanding of the amendment is on page 90, lines 33 to 35, to reinstate the stricken language.
That is correct.
All right. Representative Emmer moves that amendment. Then to your amendment, Representative Emmer.
Very quickly, if you refer back to page 73, where it references the definition of not line of duty death, that's what this relates to. As I understand it, for some reason we've decided in this proposal, and I didn't get a chance to talk to Representative Murphy, but we are, by deleting the language as proposed without the amendment, we are saying that if someone who's entitled to these benefits is serving in Afghanistan or Iraq and is killed in the line of duty, that they would not qualify as line of duty death for their retirement benefits, and I think that's not appropriate.
I believe we have one person who wishes to testify. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Robert Johnson, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters, Minneapolis Police Federation, and Teamsters Local 320 Law Enforcement, which is statewide. We're very familiar with the bill that deals with PERA, PNF. We had concerns about the totality of the bill and expressed that in the Pension Commission. We, however, are not in any opposition, per se, as to the other sections of the bill. But this is one area in which both police and fire feel strongly and would support the Emmer motion to delete the provision which currently, under law, allows for a service personnel. The uniqueness of police and fire, just by the mere nature of their job, they are generally the ones that also enlist in the military, in the National Guard. And so we have already had one Minnesotan killed in the war who was a police officer. This provision was a result of that death. We would urge members of the committee to support the Emmer motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
I would like to remind the committee that this provision was a floor amendment in the Senate, I believe, that did not go through the Pension Commission or this committee at any time. And that the provision cost, it was done without the board of the funds discussion or approval. And it, although it is current law, it was put in current law by an amendment, not based on good pension policy or any pension principles. And one of the things in the Pension Commission that I have long suggested that we do, and now I will have the opportunity as the new chair of the Pension Commission to really do it during the interim. I've suggested it over the years, almost every summer, to the chair of the Pension Commission, that we ought to gather all the pension, all the plans together to discuss whether they have a term of 3 years or 2 years, or how long does the spouse have to be, how long do they have to be married before the spouse qualifies for the various benefits that they are receiving. And this affects that, and we've never had a long time term discussion of those, whether it's 3 years, 5 years, 2 years, 1 year, 6 months, whatever. And I plan on doing that during this interim. And so if you indeed do this and keep the law as suggested rather than going with the suggestion of the plan's repealer, then it's very likely we may have a different opinion next fall or next year in the omnibus bill again, and this might be a topic for discussion all over again.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Emmer beat me to the punch because I do support his amendment. I think it's a good idea. And just so members know, this came up in the context of a St. Louis Park police officer, David Day, who died in Iraq. And this was a way to get some benefits to his wife to make sure that his time in Iraq counted towards his service credit. Actually, I believe that the Day family is technically constituents of Representative Winkler, the other half of St. Louis Park, the lesser half of St. Louis Park. We've got both halves of St. Louis Park here, and, you know, that's okay. But anyway, this was a St. Louis Park police officer, and I just wanted to put a name and possibly a face with the problem. It was a real problem, and it was a tragedy that was averted. I don't remember, Representative Murphy, the procedural history because it was then Representative Latz, now Senator Latz, who carried it and who was really the point person on that. But I do remember it was a real emotional thing in our community, and so I'd appreciate members' support for the Emmer Amendment.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, this in no way affects that person. We do not take away benefits when they get, and what we were doing really terrible pension policy for the benefit of one person, and to disguise it that it was not just for the benefit of one person, we made it even worse by making it a universal issue. I mean, the basic problem is that you can't do universal pension policy for one person. And I was here when the line of duty language came in, and I was also here when we put the length of time for a marriage in. And this was the sense that it was to avoid what we called, which obviously this case wasn't, the deathbed marriages that were highly expensive. Pension policy lasts for a very, very long time. This does not affect that person. At the time that we did it, it did. She will continue to receive probably $200,000 from the state over a long period of time, whether she remarries or not. And when I was in third grade, which was a very, very long time ago, but my teacher at that point announced on one day that we had just paid off the last bill from the War of 1812. And what that was, and what it was, if you can do the math if you want. Now, this was like sometime in the 40s, in the 40s of this century. Of the last. And what had happened was you had someone who had been, the last century, I said the last, you had someone who had been a drummer boy in the War of 1812. And then married a very young woman just before, just towards the end of their life. And this very young woman, who is now a very old woman, somewhere in the 1940s, I could do the math and tell you exactly what year it is, but not right now, died. So pension policy is incredibly expensive. And it's probably the only thing I remember from third grade that you got to be very careful about what decision, and I never got to use it to really think about it in my life until I got to the list. A pension policy is very, very expensive. And this is an example of bad pension policy, and we will not harm this person, Representative Simon and Representative Winkler. She's fine, no problem. We're not taking a penny away from her, but we should correct the bad policy that we made, which did not come through the Pension Commission, and we should take Mayor Representative Murphy's decision that we are going to redo this during. Look at it, it's in the interim.
Well, Representative Kahn, this must have been extraordinary, because if it was someone who participated in the War of 1812, Minnesota wasn't a state till 1858, so how were we paying
for it? The country. It was a federal pension, remember? Federal pension. But remember, we're taxpayers. We pay federal pensions.
Just clarify.
Yes.
Did you go to third grade in Minnesota?
No, I didn't go to third grade in Minnesota. But it does affect, but I still learn things that affected Minnesota taxpayers.
Thank you. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to Representative Kahn's point about we don't make pension policy for one person, I would direct you to page 129, lines 129.29, an eligible person is a person who was born on December 29th of 1958, first employed by the City of St. Paul. I would direct you to lines page 131, line 131.7. This person was employed at the Midwest Pathology Incorporated as of December 31st, 2006. Mr. Chairman, I would point you to the direction of lines 131.23. This person was born on April 1st of 1947. And Mr. Chairman, if we don't make pension policy for individual people, then we ought to be striking the entire Section 12.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
Representative Broad, you've made my point precisely. If we had written this, because this, in that, we listen to these cases, we're very careful about what kind of precedent we're setting, we're very careful to limit it when we think that it's really, that it's a good idea to do. The problem with this provision is that it wasn't done in the Pension Commission, and it didn't have. It had had those kinds of language in that that clearly stated we were dealing with an individual case that was not general pension policy. It would have been okay. And that's the kind of thing that we couldn't have done.
Where the motion
because it was done by non-pension people.
The motion before us is the Emmer Amendment.
Yes.
We've drifted into the War of 1812 and a number of other areas.
If I would oppose the Emmer Amendment.
All right. Representative Broad, do you have anything to add? I think you've added quite a bit.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I would just encourage people to support the Emmer Amendment. The issue was very, very interesting on the House floor. There was a very significant rationale for doing this, and I would really support the Emmer Amendment and encourage every member of this committee to do so.
I'd ask for a roll call, Mr. Chairman.
Roll call has been requested. No further discussion. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Broad?
Yes.
Representative Emmer?
Yes.
Representative Hilty?
No.
Representative Powles? Representative Kahn?
No.
Representative Kalin?
Yes.
Representative Morgan?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Olson? Representative Peterson? Representative Poppy?
No.
Representative Simon?
Yes.
Representative Winkler?
Yes.
Representative Walschlager?
Chair votes yes. There being 9 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment.
Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment that's to be read by Mr. Shepard. It's really in light of the discussion. I really came into this meeting this morning pretty open to the pension bill. I think Representative Morgan made some fantastic points in regards to aligning things, and I think Mr. Rice made some good points in regards to making sure that, you know, talking about benefits and where these pensioners for the St. Paul teachers are at. And this amendment is attempting to address both of those things and move us in the right direction of solving for the St. Paul Teachers Fund.
All right. Representative Broad moves the amendment as explained by Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment is on page 106, line 27. And the amendment would delete the 5.0% and insert 2.5%, comma, unless the assets of the plan are equal to or greater than the accrued liability of the plan, comma, in which case the final amount may not exceed 5%.
Members, does everyone have the amendment? I think we've discussed this before, and this was part of the discussion with Representative Emmer, I believe, to the Morgan Amendment originally. So is this a combination of what Representative Emmer had explained earlier, Representative Broad?
Mr. Chairman. It's a combination of the Morgan original amendment, Emmer's suggestion, and then also brings back in Representative Morgan's final comment about making sure that the benefits are paid out if it's solvent. So it's kind of a combination platter of all three.
Representative Morgan.
I'd just like to urge support of the Broad Amendment.
Representative Nelson.
My question, I guess, Mr. Chair, Mr. Shepard, would this have the effect of if the plan is not solvent, no increase could be paid out, or would the minimum be 2.5%?
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Nelson, it would be the latter. The full sentence would read that the final amount may not exceed 2.5%. Unless the plan is fully funded, in which case it could go up to 5%. So if the plan were not fully funded, the inflation component could go up to 2.5%.
Representative.
Well, can we hear from either Mr. Rice or Mr. Kapler on this? I think it's the same as the Morgan Amendment with more words in it.
Let's hear from Mr. Kapler. I think he's the one that was responsible for the fund.
It depends what the word solvency is, which isn't a word we use.
Mr. Chairman,
welcome again to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Phil Kaplan from the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund. Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I understand that there's a concern here about relative payouts in some regard between the state funds and St. Paul teachers who brought this proposal completely independent of them. We're not here to sort of affect their situation and the structure of their benefits. And we really don't want to make invidious comparisons. They've got their own issues to deal with in the post fund. I expect they're going to come back with an initiative that may be very different from what St. Paul Teachers has before you right now, but they're going to address the funding concerns that they have. This is really almost worse than the last amendment because it requires that our entire fund be fully funded, 100%. That isn't going to happen based on current contribution rates and actuarial work until the year 2038. I mean, that's what you're locking in here. Understand that the benefit, post-retirement benefits that are paid out by the state funds are paid out of a segregated post-retirement fund. When a member retires, they take the assets out of the active member fund. They fully fund on a net present value basis the liability for that retirement. So when a member retires, they go into a new fund, in effect, that is fully funded by default and by fiat by taking the assets out of the active member fund. We have one fund that covers active members and retired liabilities. This is a proposal that really tilts against St. Paul Teachers because of the way that we're structured in a way that, naturally, I'm going to assert, is a more rational funding design combining the active and post-retired liabilities and especially the way that we're proposing financing them. This sort of presumes that we operate with a post fund. We don't. And the post fund has a full funding requirement before they will, not before they'll pay a post-retirement increase. Mind you, the ones that they've given in the past are there, permanent compounding rolling forward. Before they will add to the post-retirement liabilities, they require that the post fund be fully funded. It makes good sense, but again, it's operating as a mechanism in an entirely different paradigm. We would consider this grossly unfair.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I oppose the amendment.
Representative Kahn.
Again, let's talk about the fairness of this. The TRA post fund is not fully funded. There's a $4 billion deficiency in all post funds if they pay the 2.5% plus investments. And we're saying you're not paying plus investments. So this thing, as it stands, Article 7, as it stands, is a cut from intended increases. You take, this goes on, you take out Article 7, which will happen somewhere along the line, and you're not doing the financial things that the fund has come together and said we ought to do. And it's just, you know, it's just because you don't live in St. Paul, as I don't live in St. Paul, doesn't mean you have, or teach in St. Paul, doesn't mean you have to be unfair and really treat them in a deleterious way compared to the rest of the state, the people in TRA.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, it seems to me that that one thing the Pension Commission could do that would be beneficial would be to bring suggestions or legislation to actually put everybody in the same kind of system so you could actually compare in some accurate way. We've had a lot of conversation that you're comparing apples to oranges, but we haven't had a lot of conversation about what the actual future of the St. Paul Fund looks like and what specific and concrete predictable effect this change will have. We have testimony that will move us in the right direction and that it's different from what the post account is for TRA, but actually getting to any kind of decision-making about what is the best approach or what would be the best way to do this is very difficult when you're operating under these two different systems. So I think confusion and frustration are a natural part of the way we're doing this already, and it's reasonable to propose.
And that's why I think I heard Representative Murphy say several times that she wants to study this in the interim. And that was what part of my amendment, which actually got adopted, to add four more people, so there'll be four more people who have some less fuzzy knowledge of what they're doing on, you know, in the room. And that's the direction that we hope to go in.
Mr. Coppola, do you wish to respond?
Mr. Chairman, members, just a point reflecting sort of on the context of the discussion. There appears to be sort of an implied assumption, A, that the capping off the post-retirement increases is somehow going to turn the fortunes of this fund around radically.
It's not
going to happen. The post-retirement increases weren't capable of sending the pension fund into a 69% funded ratio from 82% in 2001. That was driven by the investment markets. It affected all of our plans. It affected all plans across the country. The reason that St. Paul Teachers is not fully funded is because the contributions that should have been made to the plan have not historically been made to the fund, either by the city of St. Paul or the state of Minnesota or the school district. For most of the history of this plan, it is the state of Minnesota, the legislature, that has set contribution rates. And in 45 of the last 48 years, the contribution to the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund has been deficient relative to actuarial requirements. I've gone back and read 48 valuations, and the comment keeps popping up. The employer, the state of Minnesota, the city of St. Paul, has to put more money into this plan. And year after year after year, that was not done. That's where the hole was created. We've done a valiant job of trying to overcome that. But there seemed to be kind of, an assumption or implied notion that the fund is in jeopardy. A, it's not. B, that's due to the trustees giving away the grain out of the barn. That's just not the case. The fund's funding difficulties primarily originate with insufficient contributions.
Mr. Goff, we're under session. Will start at 10. We've discussed this at some length. Representative Murphy has expressed her position on this amendment. So I think without any further discussion, we will go to a vote. All those in favor of the broad amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Division, Mr. Chairman.
Division has been requested. All those in favor of the amendment? We have it. All those opposed? The motion does not prevail. To the bill, as amended. Representative Murphy, I have to make a motion here. I have to move the H1987-6A delete everything amendment to the, well, I don't think we moved it in. Excuse me, one second. Madam, all right, I'm going to move that the H1978-6A amendment, as amended, be delete everything amendment. Be moved to amend HF1978. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So now we have the bill as amended in proper form. I hope. Okay. I'm never too sure sometimes. Any further discussion to the bill as amended? Representative Anderson.
And I apologize for this, but it's not so much to the bill, but some of the comments that Representative Kahn and Representative Winkler had referenced. And we had a study done by Mr. Nobles and his crew, and they made a different recommendation when it came to the issue of the St. Paul TRA. And I guess I'm puzzled that we're going to study it some more to come up with, you know, maybe an answer that people seem to like more. So I guess I'm kind of... I'm new to this, and I'm just curious as to why we didn't go with those recommendations after it had been studied by Mr. Nobles and his people.
I believe, Representative Anderson, that could be directed to Representative Murphy, and some of those recommendations were incorporated into this pensions bill. And members, if you remember back in January, we did hear the legislative auditor's report, and then subsequently to that, we had Representative Huntley's bill dealing with the pension problems of Duluth. as an example of one of the issues that were in the legislative auditor's report. So we covered some of them, and I agree we have not covered all of them, but let's have Representative Murphy answer your question.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, we are going to, in June and July, we are going to consider all the recommendations of the legislative auditor during the interim, and we are going, we know that there has to be some things implemented before August 15th, and we are going to make those recommendations.
Representative
Chair, Representative Murphy, I'm heartened by that, but I am also I'm puzzled why some of those recommendations weren't implemented right away. I think the whole discussion that we had is the concern over the solvency. And I guess I'll remember the fellow's comments that 69% isn't that bad. I'll remember that part for a long, long time. And, you know, I'm just concerned that we get at the heart of that problem and get us up to the 90% level. So we are comparing apples to apples when we're looking at these different pension plans.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, partly it was, as I explained at the very beginning of my remarks today, that the Pension Commission wasn't appointed until mid-session, and then we had all those bills that we had to go through, and time was just of the essence, and we just didn't get to it. And we have to give it the proper time to ponder those things.
Representative Anderson, the Pension Commission only meets a very limited number of times. They're not a standing committee in the sense that they meet on a weekly basis or even a monthly basis, so they only have two or three meetings at best. And considering the volume of bills that they get, it's fair that they will take an interim look at this. And Representative Anderson, it's probably also fair that we may be taking an interim look at it, too. We have a list of topics that you've yet to see that we'd like to explore over the interim before the next session. So, and members have brought forward.
And Mr. Chair, I do recognize that you are, it's a lot of work to do the pensions, and I do appreciate the work that you have done.
You're welcome.
Representative Powell.
Since Representative Anderson voted no on my amendment, we'll assure that she's not one of the seven. I assume that was expressed the desire to not be on the pension commission.
Mr. Chair, I don't think Representative Hahn gets to pick.
Mr. Chair, I would suggest we put her on the commission as punishment for voting no on Representative Kahn's amendment.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of, I'm going to renew my motion on House File 1978 as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Rules Committee. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill is on its way. Representative Murphy, thank you for being very patient.
Thank you.
For enlightening us.
Thank every one of you.
The next bill on the agenda is Senate File 1075. Representative Clark. Before we have Representative Clark, we've got a lot of milling around. Representative Morgan, you have a motion.
I do have a motion to approve the minutes of, yes, March 23rd, 2007, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no further discussion to the Morgan motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Clark, I am going to move that Senate File 1075 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Rules Committee. Representative Clark, we're under some time constraint.
I understand.
So to the bill.
Mr. Chairman, how much time do we have?
Well, it's a quarter to.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for hearing this bill, and I will be very brief, and as will the witnesses that I've assembled here today. Some of them have come from a distance. I want to give them a chance to say at least a few words, and I do want to say that this is a very, very significant bill, and I appreciate the hearing. Minnesota has the opportunity here to join what a number of other states are doing in dealing with what is happening right now that has been declared genocide in our world, and right now we are witnessing terrible suffering and horrible crimes in the Darfur region of Sudan. And as I mentioned, both our president and our Congress and the UN have all declared these crimes to be genocide, an unprecedented declaration. Just briefly what the bill does, it requires the State Board of Investment to engage with and divest from what's described as scrutinized companies, and it sets out the criteria for those scrutinized companies and requires that the State Board engages with those companies and works to help curtail the kinds of contribution to the violence that's happening that these companies may be involved in. It has specific requirements. It's a good idea for a number of reasons. The Sudan government is heavily reliant on foreign investment, and this will be an effective means to help curtail the genocide that's going on there. There are provisions to protect the State Board of Investment from financial risk, and I'll let that be described a little bit later. It does allow our employees to take a stand in terms of the genocide that's going on there. You have some documents before you, I think, legislative findings and so on. I want to turn to Mr. Scott Weiser, who's joined us today from the Sudan Divestment Task Force.
Mr. Weiser, to the bill.
Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Scott Weiser. I'm from the Sudan Divestment Task Force. That's a project of the Genocide Intervention Network. I'll try and do this quickly. As you all know, a genocide's been going on and it's entering its fifth year. The Sudanese government has proved immune to any diplomatic or political efforts to stop the violence there, but they're heavily dependent on foreign direct investment. Targeted divestment is the tool that anti-genocide activists have turned to stop the violence. The government of Sudan is predicting 13% economic growth next year, which is a phenomenal figure considering that they're busy murdering their own civilians. This growth is driven largely by the oil sector, where foreign companies are investing. No U.S. companies would be subject to divestment based on the targeted criteria, which are that a company has a business relationship with the government of Sudan, fails to support Sudanese civilians, and fails to have a strong corporate governance policy in Darfur. Of the revenues that the government gets from the oil sector, 70% are spent on military expenditures. So the link between what these companies are doing and the genocide in Darfur is very clear. By passing this legislation in concert with many other states, universities, cities, as well as a global divestment campaign, we have the opportunity to sever the economic lifeline to genocide. The government of Sudan has been historically responsive to economic pressure. In 1997, sanctions which were issued for terror-related reasons saw a 180-degree turn in the terror policy of the government of Sudan. A divestment campaign against Talisman Oil, a Canadian oil company, was very influential in 2002 in ending the North-South civil war in Sudan. The current divestment campaign presents real financial risks in holding these companies. The State Board of Investment will be protected from financial risk if they move out of scrutinized companies, which are subject not just to a divestment campaign, but also negative publicity, potential sanctions from the European Union and United Nations, and incidents on the ground which may threaten their financial stability. Because of the targeted nature of the bill, it's likely that less than 0.3% of the assets of the State Board of Investment will be affected. There are financially equivalent and likely more profitable financial opportunities available, so although one emerging market energy company needs to be divested from, that certainly doesn't exclude you from the whole sector. There are specific provisions to protect the pension fund, including reinvestment, if the pension fund were to lose 0.5%, although it's exceedingly unlikely that that would ever need to be invoked. We're basically looking at de minimis transaction costs that would be recouped by moving into companies that are not subject to divestment. That's as fast as I can do that, but I will be available for questions if people have
them. All right. Mr. Weiser, did I ask you to identify yourself for the record?
Yes, and I did. I'm Scott Weiser.
Sorry, we're moving fast. I just want to make sure. All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Ellen Kennedy. I'm a professor at the University of St. Thomas and at Carleton College. I teach about genocide, and I'm the state coordinator of the Genocide Intervention Network, a coalition of colleges, universities, religious and civic institutions, and ordinary citizens who advocate for an end to genocide, some of whom are here today. I've been to Turkey. 1 million Armenians were killed in that genocide in 1915. I've been to Auschwitz. 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust. That was a concentration camp in Poland during World War II. I've been to Cambodia. 2 million Cambodians were killed in that genocide in 1975. And 2 years ago, I went to Rwanda. I met a young woman, Alice Musa Bende. When Alice was 14 years old in 1994, her mother sent her on an errand to the next village. When Alice returned home, she found the mutilated bodies of her grandparents, her parents, her brother, and her sister. They were victims of a genocide that killed nearly 1 million people in 100 days. The world stood by and did nothing. Stalin once said, a single death is a tragedy, 1 million deaths a statistic. The deaths in Darfur, more than 400,000, are truly a tragedy, each and every one of them. April was the memorial month for the Rwandan genocide, the Armenian genocide, and the Holocaust. We memorialize the victims of genocide instead of ending genocide. Each time we say never again, it's time to say that we will take a stand. We've sent a million postcards to President Bush. We've advocated for greater diplomatic efforts and sanctions, and nothing has worked. I urge you to pass this divestment bill. We know that the government of Sudan will respond to economic pressure. More than 300 Minnesotans have sent letters to Representative Pelosi.
I agree, we're extremely sympathetic.
Thank
we
you.
Are under an incredible time crunch here. So if I could get Mr. Vicker from the Minnesota State Board of Investments, is he still here?
Yes.
To tell us what this does in regard to the Board of Investments, please. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Howard Bicker. I'm the director of the State Investment Board. Very briefly, first of all, the State Board has not taken a position on this piece of legislation. As far as the effects of the State Board of Investment, it will not affect any of our domestic equities because the U.S. Congress already has restrictions on U.S. companies doing business with Sudan. And we have done some work. It would affect approximately $80 to $90 million worth of international equity securities out of a $15 billion portfolio. So from a financial perspective, this would have little effect. Just very briefly, I wanted to also make the committee aware that the State Board has taken some actions as it relates to Sudan and passed a resolution, which I believe you already have in your folder. So, Mr. Chairman, member, that's a quick response. I know we have a time for it.
Yes, sir. Welcome to the, if there are any questions directed at any of these individuals, if they can be brief. Senator Wolschiger. Representative Wolschiger.
It's fine.
I've upgraded you.
Could you just say 80 to 90 million out of how much again?
Of our international programs, approximately $15 billion.
I'm sorry, 15?
Yes, billion.
Yes, sir. Please welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dan O'Keefe. I am an executive vice president of the Benfield Companies, headquartered here in Minnesota with approximately 400 employees. I'm here just to register support of the bill and to say what I really like about this bill is that it's practical. It's not just symbolic. If enough organizations and legislatures adopt this, it is the one opportunity to have a real impact, maybe the best opportunity to have a real impact on the genocide in Rwanda. So I urge the support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Ben Nebo. I'm a student at the University of St. Thomas and a member of the anti-genocide constituency. As a refugee from Liberia, I urge you to please help stop this genocide. Help Minnesota be a voice of never again and actually solving something instead of memorializing it. Thank you very much.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
My name is Robin Phillips. I'm the executive director of Minnesota Advocates for Human Rights, and we provided my statement in full. So I just, in summary, want to say we support the passage of this bill. We know the government of Sudan is participating actively as well as supporting Janjaweed militia in committing genocide as well as numerous other human rights abuses, rape, extrajudicial execution, recruitment of child soldiers, and other atrocities. And we believe that putting economic pressure is the best way to force the government of Sudan to discontinue the genocide. And we believe that it's important now and that we can literally save lives and honor our common humanity by supporting this bill and protecting the individuals in Sudan. Thank you.
Representative Clark,
Mr. Chairman,
the bill.
I just would ask members to support the legislation. We've had very abbreviated testimony, but I hope you have heard it, and with the other testimony, the impact that you can have here today.
Thank you. I'm going to renew my motion unless there's any discussion. Seeing no discussion, that House file or Senate file 17, I'm sorry, Senate file 1075 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Rules Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, committee members.
Meeting is adjourned.